Is our Constitution imbecilic? Or could it be that the person who is analyzing it as such has an ulterior motive? We'll find out today on Principles and Policies. Hello, my name is Chuck Michaelis. I'm the Vice Chairman of the Institute for Principled Policy and the Executive Director of Camp American. Barry Sheets, my normal co-host, is unavailable today for recording, so I'm flying solo today. Barry is very busy. He is an elder in the Presbyterian Church, and he is currently at a meeting of the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church, handling some issues having to do with record keeping. He is on a record review committee, so he's very, very busy. They're working very hard to make sure that things are done correctly in their church. Now, you may be wondering what I'm talking about when I opened today's show with that opening. Well, we're going to be talking about an article written in the New York Times. It's actually an opinion piece. It's in their campaign stops section, and it's subtitled Strong Opinions on the 2012 Election. And this is definitely a strong opinion. I'm going to be posting, when I get it up on the website, I will be posting an address for that so you can go out and read the editorial for yourself. It's written by a man named Sanford Levinson, who, to say the least, has an interesting career. It doesn't take long. All you have to do is put in the name Sanford Levinson into Google, and you will come up with a number of, shall we say, interesting opinions that Mr. Levinson, who, by the way, is a law professor at University of Texas Law School, and he is a noted critic of the United States Constitution, and we're going to delve into some of his opinions because they're very important for understanding where a number of critics are coming from. I will tell you right up front that Sanford Levinson does not like our Republican form of government. Sanford Levinson would like very much to eliminate the state governments. He would like very much to go to a national government wherein basically the president and the Congress would act more as a parliament rather than our legislature. And if you don't know the difference, that's understandable. A parliament would be more of a form of a national government. And by that, I mean that the federal government, well, we would no longer have a federal government. There would be a single national government like England has, and it would make all decisions for the country. There basically wouldn't be any home rule like we have under the state constitutions. Those would be eliminated. Basically, we would go to a system where there might be states, but they would be administrative districts that operate at the behest of the national government. This is the kind of system that Sanford Levinson is attempting to push. You can tell from this piece where Levinson is coming from, and we will look at that, his writing, just to show you that this is a little bit vitriolic. Once again, this is called a strong opinions on the 2012 election. This is a very strong opinion. Okay, Levinson starts out by talking about how in the Federalist Papers, the writers of the Federalist mocked the government created by the Articles of Confederation, which the Constitution replaced. And he is correct. He says that they called it imbecilic. The Federalist Papers mocked the imbecility of the weak central government created by the Articles of Confederation. But he says nearly 225 years later, the critics across the spectrum call the American political system dysfunctional, even pathological. Well, I don't know of too many critics beyond Levinson and his particular ilk who are calling the American government pathological. And he claims that it's the role of the Constitution itself is creating the pathology. Now, of course, he has to go back and talk about the Civil War and the slavery as it exists in the Constitution. And he also is very disparaging of the fact that, for instance, California and Rhode Island have the same voting rights in the Senate, as opposed to, for instance, in the House of Representatives, where I think California has 55 representatives and Rhode Island has, oh gosh, five, I think, something like that. I don't know these numbers off the top of my head. I think California's 55. In any case, it's a lot more, the vote is a lot more like Sanford Levinson would like to see it at all levels in the House of Representatives. But there's a reason why we have one state, two votes in the Senate. Now, it's pretty obvious that Levinson is being a little what we would call tendentious here. And what that means is he's only presenting evidence that support his case. The fact is that Levinson's scheme for representation was brought up and pushed very hard by people that were nationalists at the Constitutional Convention. And by nationalists, I mean people like Alexander Hamilton, like John Randolph, like James Madison, who wanted to eliminate the state governments. You don't necessarily understand that James Madison was a nationalist. When he was at the Constitutional Convention, he was a committed nationalist and had been for many, many years, actually, since very early in the Republic, in the early days of the Articles of Confederation. He had wanted to get rid of the Articles of Confederation and replace it with a national government. And that's a long story, and we won't go into that because we only have 15 minutes today. But the fact is that Levinson wants to eliminate the idea that the states would have equal representation in the Senate. In fact, I think he really wants to eliminate the upper house. He doesn't say so, but that seems to be the gist. He doesn't like the fact that we have a proportional representation in the form of the Electoral College. This is where Levinson really lets the cat out of the bag, is his feelings on the Electoral College. And if you've heard our programs that we've done on the Electoral College, we are big supporters of the Electoral College. And there's a good reason for that. The Electoral College is an important form of proportional representation. Sanford Levinson does not like proportional representation. He likes the idea of the majority being over to overwhelm the minority. This is a very dangerous viewpoint, because essentially what it says is that law basically comes from the voice of the majority only. And he is not talking about being able to protect the minority. I'm sure that he's thinking in terms of a benevolent majority, making sure that nothing bad happens to the minority viewpoint. But the fact is that the minority viewpoint would have no representation under Sanford Levinson's scheme. So he is very disparaging of the separation of powers and the checks and balances, the legacy of the founders' mistrust of factions. Well, okay, the founders did mistrust factions, and what they called factions, we today call party politics. The factions that they were talking about was people that align on party lines. Now, he claims that that means we rarely have anything that can truly be described as a government. That is a very telling statement. Ladies and gentlemen, we have plenty of government. And the reason that we have what he calls gridlock is because that was built into the system. Is government supposed to move slowly? Yes, it is. That was designed into the system on purpose. Now, Levinson says that's a bad thing. He wants for the government to operate on the whim of the majority whenever the majority wants something. So as the tides of public opinion come and go, he wants the law to change with it. That's exactly what the Founding Fathers designed the system to work to avoid. Save for those rare instances when one party has hefty control over four branches. Ladies and gentlemen, there are only three branches of government. Although he is calling the House of Representatives and the Senate a separate branch, that is also a very telling statement. He would like to eliminate the upper house. He calls the four branches, the House of Representatives, the Senate, the White House, and the Supreme Court, gridlock threatens. Elections are increasingly meaningless, at least in terms of producing results commensurate with the challenges facing the country. Now, does anybody really think that's true? Yes. Do the two parties right now operate basically under the same tenets? Yes, but that's not the fault of the electorate. That is the fault of the parties. The parties are attempting both to move to places where they can steal as many members or get as much of the middle ground as they can. This is a problem that basically makes it so that viewpoints outside the mainstream really don't get any representation. Now, under Levinson's scheme, that's not going to get any better. It's going to be worse. Levinson is highly critical of Article 5, as we have been, but he's critical of it from a different perspective. He's critical of it because it is, quote-unquote, among the most difficult to amend of any in the world. The last truly significant constitutional change was the 22nd Amendment added in 1951 to limit presidents to 2 terms. Levinson is a big advocate of too much presidential power to get rid of, to strip the president, the executive branch, of some of its power. And for that, we applaud him. We think he's correct. There's too much power concentrated in the executive branch. What Levinson would do in its stead, I'm not sure. I think he lets the cat out of the bag again below, where he talks about the near impossibility of amending the national constitution not only prevents needed reforms. I would disagree wholeheartedly with that. It also makes discussion seem futile and generates a complacent denial that there is anything to be concerned about. It was not always so. In the election of 1912, 2 presidents, past and future, seriously questioned the adequacy of the Constitution. Well, that's been going on forever, ladies and gentlemen. The presidents have always wanted more power. They've always wanted to squeeze more power out of the Constitution than the Constitution gives them. So it's not surprising that these two power mongers, Woodrow Wilson and Theodore Roosevelt, and again, we're not big friends of Theodore Roosevelt or Woodrow Wilson, 2 presidents, past and future, Theodore Roosevelt would have allowed Congress to override Supreme Court decisions invalidating federal laws, while Woodrow Wilson basically supported a parliamentary system, as president tried to act more as a prime minister than an agent of Congress. Yeah, exactly. In a parliamentary system, the prime minister wields a whole lot more power than the president of the United States does in a constitutionally limited republic. And what Levinson is calling for, even though he's an advocate against unbridled presidential power, he's calling for the president to be given more power here. So he's a little bit self-contradictory, not shocking. The thing about Woodrow Wilson allowing Congress to override Supreme Court decisions invalidating federal laws, well, okay, there's already a provision in the Constitution that allows that. Article 3 has a provision where essentially the Supreme Court only has appellate jurisdiction on most cases that come before it. And what that means is that the Supreme Court is not the court of first resort. And the Congress has the ability to take Supreme Court decisions, negate them, and take it out of the hands of the federal court system. For instance, we've heard a lot of things about we need a flag-burning amendment. Okay, let's talk about the flag-burning amendment. Right now, the only reason that federal laws prohibiting burning the flag, and this is not a discussion on the merits of burning the flag or not burning the flag, this is simply talking about constitutional law. The fact is that the Supreme Court has ruled that it is a matter of free expression to be able to burn the United States flag. Well, it would be a very simple matter, because that is a function of their appellate jurisdiction. There is a clause in Article 3 that allows the Congress to strip them of the ability to hear further cases. So all Congress really has to do is pass a law that says flag burning is banned, and the Supreme Court and no other federal court shall have any jurisdiction in this case. Well, surprise, surprise, Levinson is claiming that Theodore Roosevelt wanted this. They already had it. That power has been in there since 1789, when the Constitution was adopted, and it was put in 1787 when it was written. So the idea that somehow Levinson and company want to hand over all this power to Congress that it already has and isn't exercising is frankly not too shocking. It shows that he is playing. Now, Levinson is no dummy. Again, he's a professor of law at the University of Texas Law School. I think Sanford Levinson understands the Constitution all too well. He also understands that you don't understand it. Because we are running short on time, I'm going to continue this discussion tomorrow, and hopefully Barry will be with me tonight, and he can join me in discussing this article, and we will further tear this article down, because we haven't even gotten through the first page. This is a 3-pager. When I say 3-pager, I printed it out. It's actually 2 and about 1/3 of a page printed out in large type so I can read it. So, that being said, Join us again tomorrow for further analysis of this article on principles and policies.